Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another Behind the Screen. I'm Lex Starwalker. I am the host of the RPG podcast Game Master's Journey, and I'm also running an actual play D&D campaign here on YouTube called Hinterlands of Alandria. And this is an original campaign in my homebrew setting of Primordia. And as an effort to help other GMs, especially newer GMs or really any GM looking to improve their craft, I am producing these behind the screen videos where we can dig into the nuts and bolts of the campaign, and you can ask questions and we can talk about, you know, how I'm doing this as a DM. So today, for the sixth of these, I'm going to be talking about creating an encounter table. But before I get into that, I do have some feedback from I usually on the podcast, I say a listener GM, but I guess this would be a viewer GM. Boz Bunnick says, I really enjoyed the first behind the screen episode. I think that may be a difference with putting in hints that maybe will play out if you guys play on is a big thing. You are world building and you are putting it on video. So even in case this particular adventuring party never reaches very far, the campaign does build world lore. People will always be able to view the videos and recognize moments that might come up in completely different campaigns, or this one if things continue on, in the same world. In a way, you are just fleshing out the world and its lore by letting stories play out in that world. And yeah, I completely agree with that. And that's one of the reasons that I wanted to do this online and share my campaign with the audience is because not only are the players and I kind of building this setting together, but these videos, these actual plays kind of can serve as documentation of that. And I've already found it very beneficial to me as a game master, because, you know, through the process of producing the actual play videos and producing these behind the screen videos, where normally, you know, I would run a given game session and then move on, and that might be the end of me thinking about what happened in that particular session. With this, you know, I edit the videos, I watch the videos, and then I talk about the sessions later in these behind the screens. So it's led to me thinking a lot more about what's happened and just being able to watch or listen to my sessions later from kind of a third person perspective has been very helpful, not only just for remembering things that happened that I might have otherwise forgotten, but also just to see myself running a game and learn from my own mistakes and what I do. And you know, sometimes it's surprising. I'll watch myself run a game and think, oh wow, that actually came across a lot better than I thought it did, and be really proud of myself, patting myself on the back. And then other times I'll be watching and think, oh, that really didn't go well. So it's been very enlightening. And you know, if you have the means to in some way record your game sessions, if only just for your own benefit, I at least have found it very helpful to go back and listen or watch those later, and kind of evaluate what you're doing. So maybe that's something to think about if you have the means to do that. So thank you, Boz, for the comment, and he was specifically referring to in one of the previous behind the screens. I was talking about some kind of far-reaching plans I have with the campaign and how I normally advise GMs to use all their cool ideas right now and not put things off, because you never know how long a given campaign will go, because things can come up and happen, and you know, we've probably all experienced that. And I'm kind of going against that to some degree in this campaign, because I do have things planned that won't come into play until much later in the campaign. But, you know, like Boz says, you know, even if I don't use it in this campaign, even if for some reason this particular group falls apart, it's still something I can use in the future. And I actually have an example of that. I started another campaign in Primordia quite a while ago, over a year ago now, I think. And we did a few adventures, but then that was it. And I was planning a longer storyline than that. I did have more things planned. And indeed, some of the things that I had planned for that campaign, I'm going to end up using in this campaign. And others I may use in this campaign, or I may use it at some later date. So really, prep that you do is never truly wasted if you're creative in how you use it. All right, so let's get into our topic today, which is creating the Misty Wood encounter table. So the Misty Wood is the first region that the player characters will have access to explore. So the village of Dianara's Rest that they've found at this point is within the Misty Wood. The Misty Wood is the forest surrounding that village. And there are other regions nearby, but that's the closest. So it's a pretty safe assumption that's the first one that the player characters will explore, if only because they must go through the Misty Wood to get to anywhere else. So as I've said in the past, I've taken a lot of cues from Ben Robbins' blog articles on West March's campaigns, and I'm pulling in a lot of those elements into this campaign. And one thing that he did that I really liked was he defined different regions in the area, like, for instance, my Misty Wood, and then he would come up with a specialized encounter table for each of those regions. So, you know, you can make a forest encounter table, right? But this is even more specific. This isn't just a list of possible encounters one could have in the forest. This is a list of possible encounters that you can have in this particular forest. And indeed, many of my regions in the area are forest regions because this is a mountainous forested area. So I have quite a number of forests. I have the fairy forest, the dark wood, the shadow forest. I'm trying to remember things off the top of my head, but quite a few of the regions in the area are forests or woods or something like that. So I could have just come up with a forest encounter table and called it done and used that for all of those. But I liked Ben Robbins' idea of having specific tables for specific areas, so that way there's a difference. So, you know, my Misty Wood encounter table will have different things on it than my Fairy Forest encounter table will. So, you know, how do we make one of these tables? How do we start out with a book full of monsters and from that end up with a table that we can roll on to generate a random encounter, or that we can use here's a list of things that are in the region to select something or some things that you want to use for an encounter. So how did I do that? So that's what we're going to talk about today. Now, I was really hoping to show you my Excel window to help illustrate this, but for some reason, I don't know why, because I've done this in the past. But for some reason, my software that I use to stream is not working to show you my Excel window. So I'll just have to describe what I'm doing. Unfortunately, I can't show you. So the first thing I'm going to say before I go into this is I made this encounter table a while ago. I worked on it for quite a while. And I made this before I got a hold of Xanathar's Guide to Everything. Now, one of the many things that you will find in the pages of Xanathar's Guide to Everything are a whole bunch of encounter tables. And basically what they've done is they've gone through the various types of terrain as defined in Dungeons & Dragons, like Arctic, coastal, forest, plains, or I think they call it grasslands, mountain hills, you know, those kinds of things. They went through each of those terrains and they made four tables for each terrain, one for each tier. So tier 1, level 0 to 4, there's a table for each of the terrains. Tier 2, level 5 to 10, I believe, there's a table for each terrain, and so on. So now, if you have Xanathar's Guide, this process is actually a lot easier because you'll be able to skip some of the beginning things I did because I didn't have access to those tables when I did this. But I think this may still be useful to you hearing how I did it without those tables because, well, first of all, not everyone's going to have Xanathar's Guide. And second of all, depending on what kind of tables you're making, you know, maybe those tables in Xanathar's Guide won't even be helpful to you because maybe you're using a different kind of terrain that they don't cover or a very specialized environment, and those tables aren't really going to be useful. So I went through and wrote down to the best of my memory how I did this so I can take you through this step by step. So the first thing I did, and remember, I didn't have Xanathar's Guide, so I didn't have any tables, is here, let me grab my DMG real quick. So the first thing I did is I started off with the monsters by environments lists in the DMG. So if you look in your Dungeon Master's Guide, this is at the back of the book, Appendix B is monster lists. And, you know, we have quite a few different lists in here, but the first series of lists are monsters by environment. So, for instance, we start out the first one, and again, this is Appendix B in the Dungeon Master's Guide. The first one is Arctic monsters. And so here we have basically a table that gives us all the monsters you might find in an Arctic area, grouped by challenge rating. So first we have challenge 0, we've got commoner and owl, and these are including NPCs from the monster manual. Challenge 1/8, we've got bandit, bloodhawk, kobold, tribal warrior. Challenge 1/4, giant owl, winged kobold, and so on. So we've got these lists for all these different terrains. So the first thing I did, which again, if you have Xanathar's Guide, you might be able to skip this step, is I went through all of those lists and I opened a new document in Excel. I found Excel to be very useful for creating these tables. The easiest thing I found as far as software to do this. And I made a sheet for each environment. So in Excel, in a single Excel document, you can have numerous sheets, which are shown by tabs at the bottom of your Excel screen. So I made a sheet for each generic environment. I take that back. I made one sheet that has all the environments on it. And then I made separate sheets in that same document for specific environments in Primordia. So my first sheet in my Excel document is encounter tables. And in that I've got coastal creatures, forest creatures, grassland creatures, all different types. And then I have specific encounter tables in other sheets, like for instance, the Misty Wood encounter table, Fairy Forest encounter table, and so on. So the first thing I did is I went into Excel and I basically translated these lists in the Dungeon Master's Guide into Excel lists. So for instance, and I kept them grouped by CR because I thought that was a helpful way to organize them. So for instance, in my encounter table sheet, the first column, column A, is coastal creatures. And I start out with the eagle at CR 0, and then the bloodhawk at CR 1/8, and so on, going down that column, listing all the creatures by CR. And I really wish I could show you my thing, but I can't. But anyway, so then the next column is the next environment, forest creatures. And then the next column is grassland creatures. Now, of course, you can set this up however you want. You know, it's whatever works for you. But the way I did it is I have it set up so all my the different terrains are in different columns side by side. And the monsters within those columns are grouped by CR, starting at CR 0. And I space them out between the different CRs in such a way so that, for instance, CR 0 on this particular table is like rows 4 to 8 or whatever. So CR0, I can read across left to right through all the trains and see all the CR0s monsters for that train. And then I go down, scroll down a little bit, and then I've got CR1/8 and so on. So that actually took a lot of time. And as I was doing this, I wasn't just, you know, copying from the Dungeon Master's Guide into this table. I was also making decisions. So I took out any monsters that didn't fit Primordia or wouldn't be found in that environment in Primordia. So there are some monsters from the Monster Manual that I just don't feel particularly fit my setting, and I just didn't put them on the tables for that reason. There's also monsters that might be found in that setting in most D&D worlds that wouldn't be found in my setting. So for instance, if we're talking about forest encounters, there's various NPCs listed under forest in the DMG, like bandits, which in, you know, your normal D&D setting, that makes complete sense. But in my world of Primordia, that doesn't make sense because there aren't people out in the wilderness for the most part. So putting bandits on one of my encounter tables doesn't really make sense because there won't be any bandits. So I removed any monsters that I felt didn't fit. Then so at this point I have a spreadsheet broken down by terrain, and within each terrain I have all the monsters that could be found in that terrain grouped by CR. The next thing I did is I pulled in monsters from other sources. So I started with Volo's Guide, and Volo's Guide actually has the same kind of list in the back of Volo's Guide where it lists monsters by terrain. So it was pretty easy to go to the forest and add anything that fit there. So I added monsters from Volo's Guide. I then added monsters from any other official D&D sources that I have, like the various adventures that have been published, like Storm King's Thunder or Curse of Strahd or Tomb of Annihilation. Oftentimes these adventures will have new monsters in them. And so any of those that I wanted to use, I went ahead and added to the tables. And I also make a notation, if this monster is coming from somewhere other than the Monster Manual, where it's coming from, just so that I can find it if I roll that thing on the table and I don't have to try to figure out what book this monster came from. You could also at this point add monsters from third-party products if you like. I did not choose to do that, but you could do that as well. So now at this point, I have a spreadsheet broken down by terrain. Each terrain has monsters listed grouped by CR challenge rating, and I've added monsters from any other sources other than the Monster's Guide or the Monster's Manual that I want to use. Next, I added monsters from perhaps other environments. That comes later. Forget I said that. I should stick to my notes here. That's why I make these notes, right? All right, so added monsters from other sources. Okay, so at this point, I have basically generic encounter tables for each of the different terrains. Now, I haven't assigned die rolls at this point. They're just basically lists of monsters for each terrain grouped by CR. So at this point, I'm going to start making my specific encounter table for the Misty Wood, which is, you know, a specific place. That up to this point, we've been creating lists of monsters for kind of generic places based on terrain, but not an actual specific place in the world. So to start with, when I made my Misty Wood encounter table, I went to my encounter table sheet in my Excel document, and I went to the forest creatures list, and I started adding those to my Misty Wood encounters list. Now, again, as I'm adding these forest creatures, I'm not just adding them all. I'm making decisions all along the way. So, you know, there might be some monsters that you would find in an average generic forest that you won't find in the Misty Wood. So I will remove those if I see any monsters that just don't seem to fit this particular forest. I also added some monsters to the Misty Wood encounter table from the hills and the mountains lists. because this is a hilly and mountainous terrain. So it makes sense that not only would you find forest monsters here, but you might also find some monsters that live in hills or mountains as well. I also added some monsters from the grasslands list because, you know, you could find some of those here as well. So at this point, I have a list of possible monsters for the Misty Wood that is, a lot of them are coming from the forest monsters list, and then there are some coming from hills, mountains, and grasslands. Now, one design consideration I have here when I'm creating this encounter table for the Misty Wood is that I want there to be a lot of fey creatures in the wilds of Primordia, because in my world of Primordia, the boundary between the Prime Material Plane and the Feywild is much thinner than it is in a lot of other places. And there are many more places in Primordia where the Feywild crosses over into the Material Plane, and that happens more often than in other worlds. But so on that hand, it's like, well, I want to make sure to have a good representation of fey creatures on my encounter chart. But on the other hand, I know that I have another region nearby called the Fairy Forest that I'm going to develop, which is a section of forest that has a lot of these crossovers with the Feywild, and there's a lot of fey of all kinds of types in this forest. So, you know, I don't want to overdo the fey in the Misty Wood, because I want there to be a discernible difference between the Misty Wood and the Fairy Forest. So if I put every fairy type I can think of in the Misty Wood, then now there's nothing really unique about the Fairy Forest. So with the Misty Wood, I want to strike kind of a middle ground here, where you do see a fey presence, and it may seem like a bit more fey than you might normally see in a forest in a D&D world. But I leave myself lots of room when we go to the Fairy Forest to have even more fey and more of a variety of fey, so that the Misty Wood and the Fairy Forest are distinct from one another. So I ended up keeping a few of the iconic fey creatures that I think would be in nearly all regions of Primordia, but I took out any of the more rare or specialized fey, I'm saving those for the Fairy Forest. So this is something I'll probably continue to fiddle with as I run the campaign, trying to find that sweet spot where the Misty Wood and the Fairy Forest each have their own unique feel and flavor. Now, another thing to think about when I'm making this encounter table is I want this area, the Misty Wood, to be a suitable adventuring area for relatively low-level player characters. So to do that, I decided to limit the deadliness of the monsters I'm going to put on this table to a maximum CR of 8. So that was just a decision I made. Is, you know, in the Misty Wood, I'm not going to have any monsters with a CR higher than 8. And as far as the kind of the spread of the various CRs of monsters, what I'm shooting for, kind of my design goal here, is to have a standard curve, to have a nice bell curve, as far as the frequency of different CRs in the table, and where the peak of my curve, the most common monster CR to be encountered in the Misty Wood, happens around CR2. So the majority of the monsters on the table are in the CR2 area, and then it tapers off towards CR 8, 1/8 or 0, and the other way towards CR 8. So, you know, I've got a few CR 0 monsters, a few CR 1/8 monsters, a few CR 8 monsters, a few CR 7, few CR 6, and then I have more CR 1/4, CR 1/2, CR 5, CR 4, CR 3, and then the majority of the monsters are around CR 1, CR 2. And so in that way, you know, I'm kind of giving this area in a level spread in a way. So you know, the toughest thing you're likely to find in the Misty Wood is, say, CR 8. And many of the creatures you'll encounter will be around CR1 to CR3, somewhere in that range. So once I had my list of Misty Wood monsters, I then refined that list, mainly focusing on taking out monsters, because at this point I had a lot of monsters. I think I had something like 90 monsters or something. And I was thinking, you know, just because I want there to be a large number of monsters, I want there to be a lot of variety. So, you know, thinking about how I'm going to handle dice rolls on the ultimate table is I'm probably going to use percentile. And if I have 90 monsters on my table, then that's not very many monsters that will have a greater than 1% chance of coming up. And something I want to do ultimately with the dice rolls on the table is have monsters that are less common to be encountered and monsters that are more common to be encountered. So I need significantly less than 100 monsters so that I can have, like, this monster you find, instead of on just one number on the D100, you can encounter this monster on three or four numbers on the D100. So there's a 4% chance to encounter it instead of a 1% chance, that kind of thing. So 90 monsters is too many. So I gotta get rid of some of them. So I went through and removed any monsters that just didn't seem to fit super well, or seemed like they would be better suited for one of the other regions I was planning to develop. At this point, I still had what I felt were too many monsters. I needed to weed more out. So at this point, I went through the list again, and I looked for monsters that I just don't enjoy using. Just personal taste, just monsters that, I don't really like this monster. I don't really like using it, or don't enjoy running or whatever. For instance, this is just a weird thing with me, but I'm not a huge fan of lycanthropes. I'm not even sure why. I just find them to be a pain. So I don't like actually having lycanthropes as random monsters on an encounter table. I'll use a lycanthrop for like a story encounter or a location-based encounter where I'm like, for this specific encounter, a werewolf makes sense, or a werebear or whatever. But I don't want to just roll one up randomly because I just don't really care to use them. So I removed a lot of lycanthropes from the table, just as an example. So at this point, I still had a lot of monsters. And actually here in my notes, I see I actually had over 100 at this point, which is even more than I remembered. So at this point, I decided I need to further refine my concept of the Misty Wood itself. What is it? What kind of tone am I going for? What's kind of the theme of this region to help me weed out still more monsters? So as I further refined my concept of what the Misty Wood is, I was able to be more selective about what would be found there. So for instance, I knew I wanted there to be a fairly good showing of goblinoids, goblins, hobgoblins, bugbears, etc., because I want to begin foreshadowing some things that I have planned with goblinoids later in the campaign. But I don't want there to be a ton of them, but just some occasional encounters with various goblinoids to possibly hint that they're around. But I don't want them to be too common where encounters with goblinoids are happening all the time. So this will come in more later when I start talking about how likely it is to encounter a given creature. But I know at this point, for instance, I probably don't want to remove any of the goblinoids from the table, but they might be ones that are less common to encounter. I also know, for instance, that I have a shadow forest that has a lot of crossings over with the Shadowfell or the Shadow Plane. So I'm also looking to avoid having too many shadow type creatures that would be better suited to the shadow forest, just like I tried to limit having too many fey creatures. So that let me eliminate some monsters as well. And, you know, I continued this process also thinking about other regions I have planned. For instance, I have a region planned where there's going to be a lot of aberrations. So I was able to remove some of the aberrations from the table because it's like, well, I don't want to have a bunch of encounters with aberrations right now because I'm going to have a region that's all about aberrations. So I can save a lot of those encounters for that region. I also, at this point, in addition to removing monsters to get me to a low enough number that I can play with the chances of or the odds of various monsters occurring, I also want to add things to the table other than monsters. I want to be able to generate random encounters that aren't just a monster or an NPC. So I add things like weather, natural hazards, encounters with NPCs, landmarks, and other interesting things the characters could find. And the plan and what I ended up doing is ultimately making subtables for these things. So for instance, on my current version of the Misty Wood encounter table, which is a percentile table, you roll D100. If you roll a one or a two, it's a natural hazard or weather. And then I have a natural hazard and weather subtable that you roll on to figure out, you know, what kind of hazard or weather do you encounter. I have, if you roll a five or six, it's some kind of animal. And by animal, I mean usually a CR0 animal or an animal that isn't likely to be a combat encounter. And then I have a subtable with all the animals. And that let me remove a lot of things from my encounter table because I removed things like deer and eagles and owls and bloodhawks and poisonous snakes and stuff like that from the Misty Wood table and put it in my animal subtable. So this gets into actually my next step, which was I looked for any monsters I could group together and put into a subtable. So I just talked about the animals or the beasts, the CR0 beasts I put in a subtable. I want to have things like this on the table because I don't think everything you see or encounter should be extraordinary. And I think encounter tables should be useful for ideas other than combat encounters, for things like social encounters or just interesting things that you see. So I want to be able to do that, but I don't want to have too many things on my table because, again, I want to be able to play around with how likely is a given result going to occur. So creating subtables is a way to do that. So my goal here is to get the list of monsters pared down enough that I can add these other possible non-monster results and still have enough fewer items than 100 that I can use a D100 and be able to have some of the possibilities occur on more than one result so I can adjust the likelihood. So looking at my finished table here, which this, I shouldn't say finished table because this is a work in progress. I'm constantly fiddling with this. And as I use the table in play, I'm sure I'll revise it even more. But, you know, there are a lot of things on here that only occur on one number, which means there's a 1% chance to encounter that thing. There's quite a few things that occur on two numbers, like, for instance, five or six, which is a 2% chance. There are things that occur on three numbers, which is a 3% chance, and I think four and even five. So I think I got up to 5% chance for some of the things that I want to be more likely to occur. Now, looking at my table, it's not perfect, and there's still tweaks I want to make to it. For instance, I feel like I still have too many things on the table because there are so many things that there's only a 1% chance of that thing happening. And even the more likely things are only like a 5% chance, which really isn't that great at odds. So I'd like to refine this further, remove more monsters so I can have things that are more likely to occur. But that's kind of where I'm at with it now. As far as subtables, I have a subtable for beasts that I mentioned. I have a subtable for caches or treasure. And this was something I stole from Tomb of Annihilation that I thought was pretty cool in their random encounter tables. They have a cache table and a treasure table. I don't think they have a treasure table, but the cache table is just the idea that in the jungles of Chult, there are people going on expeditions to explore all the time, and they'll leave little hidden caches here and there. And it could be rations, it could be arrows, it could be a tinderbox to make a fire, it could be potions, you know, just anything that someone might squirrel away to come back and get later, and then they die or whatever, and they never come back and get it. And so this is something that the player characters could find. So I thought that was a really cool idea. Now, this is a lot less likely to happen in Primordia, because like I said, there aren't, in this day and age, there aren't people out roaming around for the most part. But there could be caches left over from 5 years ago and earlier, from back when people did explore more. So I thought that was a cool idea. And as well as actual treasures, you know, the idea that, that, you know, you don't necessarily have to fight some monster or go through some dungeon complex to find a treasure. You might just get lucky and find something buried somewhere or hidden away somewhere. So I have a table for that. Another thing I've seen done in some of the Wizards of the Coast products for D&D is where they'll have on a random table where you find a body of someone. So I haven't actually made this one yet, but I want to make a dead explorer's table where you find the remains of some humanoid person who met a bitter end out in the wilderness. And those could be sources for possible treasure as well. And then another idea from Tomb of Annihilation that I liked is they have, in Chult, they have some rare and useful flora and fauna that you can find. I think it's mainly flora. It's like plants, like herbs and stuff that have various uses that you can find in the jungle that will either be useful to you, maybe they cure a disease or something, or something that you could turn around and sell to an NPC for money. So I like that idea, and this is something I still need to do, but I want to make a table like that for the Misty Wood, where there might be some plants or mushrooms or nuts or natural resources that you can find that might just be useful to the player characters or might be a commodity that they can later trade or sell. So one thing I'll mention briefly, and this is kind of a can of worms thing that maybe I could talk about in a later episode, but you know, I mentioned how I like having this where they can find a cache or even a treasure and not have to like go through a dungeon or fight a monster to do so. And you might be wondering, well, why do you like that? Why do you see that as a good thing? And it's kind of interesting. And like I said, this is kind of a can of worms. I don't know, you know, how deep I want to get into this today, but I've noticed that there's some dissonance between the way that we're told D&D should play and the way that it actually plays in practice based on the system that Wizards of the Coast has created. So my favorite example of this is the pace of leveling. Okay, so somewhere, I don't remember if it's in the DMG or the player's handbook, but somewhere a suggestion is given as far as, you know, if you're wondering, well, how long should it take my player characters to get from one level to another? And somewhere Wizards gives the following suggestion. They say, well, assuming a 4-hour game session, going from level 1 to level 2 should take one session. Going from level 2 to level 3 should take one session. Going from level 3 to level 4 should take two sessions. Then going from level 4 to 5 and every level thereafter should take 2 to 3 sessions. Which, okay, so you may like that, you may not. Now, me personally, that sounds about right to me. That sounds like about like the leveling pace that I would like to have. Seems about right. Not too fast, not too slow. So sure, okay, I'm on board with that. But then if you turn and look at the actual experience, like how much experience you get for various encounters at various levels, how many encounters you're likely to be able to get through in a 4-hour session. If you use the standard encounter-based experience, there's no way that, for instance, you're going to be able to give the players enough experience to get from level 1 to level 2 in one 4-hour session. I challenge you to find a way to do so. I've tried to do it, and I found it to be impossible. You just cannot create enough encounters where every player in the group is going to get 300 XP in one gaming session and advance to level 2. Or you either are going to have to create encounters that are going to be too much for them to handle. In order to get that much XP, or you're going to have to create more encounters than you can possibly run in 4 hours. So either way, it's not possible. And this is consistent through all the levels of play I've done. So all the way up to like say 10th level, this has been the case. There is this discrepancy between what they're saying as far as this is how fast we think player characters should level versus how fast player characters will actually level if you use the mechanics that they've given you, as far as this is what a monster is worth for XP, this is what an encounter is worth, et cetera, et cetera. And this is even including if you're giving bonus XP for things like role playing, et cetera, non-combat encounters, as long as you're not like going crazy with the amount of XP you're giving, if you're staying within those ranges, even awarding bonus XP for things like that, you're not going to be able to match that leveling pace. Even using milestone XP, if you do it as suggested in the DMG, you're not going to be able to match that leveling pace. So a minor milestone is equivalent to an easy encounter, and a major milestone is equivalent to a hard encounter. And again, you're, for instance, to go from level 1 and 2 to 2, you're not going to be able to have enough milestones in one session to get them 300 XP. Not if you're only playing 4 hours, which is what they're assuming. So there's a major disconnect there, right? And that's something that we as Dungeon Masters have to decide how to handle. I'm still working on this myself for this campaign. You know, the easiest way is just to hand wave XP and to either just say you'll level when I tell you you'll level, or you'll level every other session, or you'll level every third session or something like that, or every 6 hours of gameplay you'll level or something like that. Or another way you could do it, and this is something I've seriously considered, is throw out XP altogether and use some kind of tokens. And for instance, like poker chips. And you could say, okay, to gain a level, you need 10 poker chips. And anytime you accomplish something of note, I'll give you a poker chip. Anytime you accomplish a minor milestone, I'll give you a poker chip. Every time you accomplish a major milestone, maybe I'll give you 3 poker chips or whatever. And you know, this doesn't change level to level. It's always 10 poker chips to level, whether you're first level or 18th level. And you decide how many poker chips they need, what you're going to give poker chips for, how many you're going to give for what. And it's a much easier way to handle and be able to reward players for what they're doing and have it not be just completely arbitrary, but have it be much simpler numbers to deal with than the actual XP numbers in the system as it's written. So that's one discrepancy, is leveling pace and XP rewards and stuff like that. Another discrepancy is treasure. So also in the Dungeon Master's Guide, we're given some guidelines as far as how much treasure should my player characters get at a given level or whatever. And we're given guidelines for this. And let me see if I can find them real quick. I don't have my Dungeon Master's Guide up here that's bookmarked, unfortunately. So I have to try to find it in here. Oh, you know what? I think it's further back than that. Or no. It's in the treasure chapter. Yeah. Excuse me. So let's see. Treasure. Where's the freaking treasure? I missed my bookmarks. Here we go. So if you're wondering how much treasure do I give my players, here's a suggestion. So we have various treasure tables in the Dungeon Master's Guide. And we have our treasure tables that generate the actual treasure. And then we have our magic item tables, right? So where is this? Oh, this is magic items. Here we go. So if you're wondering how much treasure to give my players, this is a suggestion given in the DMG. Over the course of a typical campaign, which means, you know, level 1 to level 20, which I would say is not a typical campaign, but that's what they mean. Over the course of a typical campaign, a party finds treasure hoards amounting to 7 rolls on the challenge 0 to 4 table, 18 rolls on the challenge 5 to 10 table, 12 rolls on the challenge 11 to 16 table, and 8 rolls on the challenge 17 plus table. So this is another discrepancy. So we're told here this is a benchmark for how many times you should be rolling on these tables and how much treasure the player should be getting. But then trying to put that into practice in your game becomes problematic. So, for instance, 7 rolls on the challenge 0 to 4 table. So, you know, maybe I'm screwed up the way I think about this, but the way I look at it is I'm like, you know, I'm probably not going to be rolling much on the 0 to 4 treasure table once the player characters are level 5 or higher, right? Like, you know, presumably I'd be rolling on the level 5 to 10 table at that point, right? So if that's true, and if I'm supposed to give them treasures from the 0 to 4 table 7 times, then that means that most or all of those 7 treasures are going to occur between level 1 and level 5. So, you know, again, if we go to their recommendation for leveling pace, level 1 to 2 is 1 session, level 2 to 3 is 1 session, 3 to 4 is 2 sessions, and then 4 to 5 is 2 to 3 sessions. So that's maybe 8 or 7, if I could count, 7 sessions to get from level 1 to level 5. And in that 7 sessions, you're going to hand out 7 treasure hoards, which, you know, it might be doable, but it's almost like you have to craft your adventure to do that, right? Unless you specifically design your adventure with the goal of every 4-hour session, my player characters are going to get a treasure hoard of some kind. It's not going to happen unless you design with that purpose in mind. It's not going to happen. For instance, in my campaign, Hinterlands of Alandria, so far we've played 4 sessions and they haven't had 1 treasure hoard yet because it hasn't made sense to give them one. I'm not just going to be like, oh, you trip over a rock and there's a treasure hoard, right? Like it needs to make sense in the story that they find a treasure hoard. The players are 3rd level, soon to be 4th level, and they haven't found 1 of those 7 treasure hoards I'm supposed to give them. So this is another disconnect as far as getting the player characters the treasure that they're, quote, supposed to have. Now, at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter in a way, because D&D 5th edition is designed assuming player characters have no magic items, so you can run them to 20th level, never give them a magic item, and you're okay. And I would guess that similarly, there's not necessarily an assumption that at a given level, they're going to have a certain amount of treasure as far as money and things they can sell for money. I mean, if the game's not assuming that they're going to have magic items, it's probably not assuming that every fighter is going to have full plate armor by level 10 or whatever either. I'm assuming here. So in that sense, it doesn't matter. I mean, just give them what you want to give them and it doesn't really matter. But from the sense of trying to reconcile this, here's the leveling pace we suggest, here's the amount of treasure we suggest, and trying to make that happen at your table, I've found it frankly impossible to do. So that's kind of I see that as a disconnect between the philosophy of the design of the game and what they're telling us they want the end result to be and what the actual end result is if you run the game as they've designed it. So that is why I, as a dungeon master, am on the lookout for ways to give my player characters treasure, because, like I said, I've run 4 sessions of a campaign and they've gotten a few gold pieces here and there for doing things for NPCs, but that's it. They haven't found any magic items. I gave them some magic items, which was another way to address this is, hey, I'll just give them a magic item to start out with. But they haven't found any magic items. They haven't found any treasure hoards because it hasn't made sense in the story. And the only way that I could have made that happen was to design the adventures specifically to make that happen. And I think there's a good chance if I would have done that, it would have felt forced and artificial and wouldn't have been satisfying. So, you know, if I were to think of, you know, where should my 3rd level characters be right now, as far as treasure that they have, they're probably a little under the curve at this point. So I'm on the lookout for ways that I can give them treasure. And also because I never like, with the exception of something like a dragon's treasure, where they're known to collect magical items and things like that. I never liked the idea of you just finding some awesome magic item in some random treasure. Like I like there to be reasons behind things. Like if there's a magic sword in this treasure hoard, there's a reason there's a magic sword in the treasure hoard, right? And it makes sense. So that can make it more challenging too. So being able to find a hidden cache or even a hidden pile of treasure somewhere due to a random encounter, say, is a good thing in my book, and is a way, I mean, I'm not going to give them a legendary magic item that way, but it's a way I could get them some more money or some gems or maybe some less powerful magic items, consumable magic items, things like that. So that's why I added that to this table. All right, so that's creating the Misty Wood encounter table. And like I said, you know, this is a work in progress. I don't think something like this is ever done. You know, I'm going to end up creating a lot of encounter tables throughout this campaign. And I will hopefully use these tables in future campaigns that I run in the same area. And as I continue to use these tables, I'm sure I'll continue to refine them. I'll add new monsters that come out in the game that I think fit. I'll over time remove monsters that I decide don't fit, or remove monsters that I've used and didn't care for how they played or whatever. There are also on the table, there's a couple things that there's only one of, and I make note of on the table. So I say this monster, there's only one of these in this region. So if the player characters kill it, then it's no longer a possible result on the table because it's dead now. So I will refine these over time. So I think one thing to help us out as GMs when we're creating tables like these is to not buy into the idea of it has to be perfect right now. And you know, I have to quote, finish this table, and this is the way it's going to be forever. What you really need is you need something that's functional that you can roll on or use during preparation or during play. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be, quote, finished. And you can always refine it as you use it more and more in the future. Let's see. Jonathan says, hey, Lex, I didn't have the opportunity so far to watch the gameplay. Do you think it retains value to only listen to it? Yeah, absolutely. And now, I don't have an audio version of the actual play. It's just on YouTube. But if you're talking about, you know, you're going to put it on YouTube and you're just going to listen and you're not going to watch a video. Yeah, I think it's not really going to lose anything other than you can't see people's faces. You can't see their expressions. But we're doing theater of the mind, so there's not maps and minis, you know, to worry about. So you're not going to be missing that. So yeah, I think it'd totally be fine just to listen to it. I think you'd get 99% of the value maybe just listening. So yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for this. Let's see. Next time, for Behind the Screen number 7, I'm going to be talking about the second session, running it. So last episode, I talked about preparing session 2, the Hinterlands. And so next time, I will talk about how that actually went in play and discuss kind of my thoughts and what I learned from it. So again, you know, I really want to ask you to please participate more and more as I go forward with these videos. I'm quickly getting to the end of what I have as far as based on prep. And I'm not going to necessarily make videos about every single game session because there comes a point where I feel like I'm just repeating myself. So more and more as we go forward with this series, I'm going to rely on you to give me comments and questions so I know what you want me to talk about and what I can explain as far as what's happening in the campaign, what I'm doing, how I'm doing it, why I'm doing it, so that you can learn what you want to learn from this. So I really encourage you to comment on the videos, ask questions. You know, there's no such thing is a stupid question, right? The only stupid question is the question you don't ask. So, you know, feel free. If for some reason you're uncomfortable doing it so publicly, you can always email me, gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. If you know, you want, you don't want to leave a YouTube comment for some reason, but, yeah, please comment and ask questions. And I will refer to those, when I do future episodes. And also, you know, if you're someone who's not able to watch these live, this is a way that you can still participate. You can comment on the videos and then I can refer to those when I make future videos. So thank you for watching. And again, we will be playing again next Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific. And I'll continue to make these behind the screens videos as long as I have something to talk about that I think will be helpful to you. So yeah, comments and suggestions and questions are appreciated. And also just let me know what you think of these videos and let me know if they're helping you. I hope that they are. All right, I'll see you soon. I hope you get some gaming done in the meantime. And until then, game on.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music, courtesy of Cloudwalker, Transboy, Renfield, Stanko, and Ish. See the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.